Well, isn't that something? That's the news. According to me. Hey, good morning. It is Tuesday, September 24th, 8:42 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am at the home studio this morning. Tomorrow morning, the plan is to be at the worldwide headquarters. That's the plan. It never seems to work out. But it's tomorrow is the plan is to be at the worldwide headquarters for the show. The big shoe, as they say. And it's a rainy day here at my location. It's a rainy day. So I'm kind of thinking maybe this is a good day to be working on some projects that involve computers, doing some things inside, maybe finishing up some straightening up of some things around here. I've got a couple of things that are on the wife's honey-do list. I've got to get those things, maybe a couple things done. I don't know. Just a lot of things pile up around here. Let's just put it that way. Because, you know, I got to get this show done. And, I got my priorities. Got priorities here. Get stuff done. And can't clean up the house if, get priorities. Get priorities. There's ink. What does that do in there? It's in the world. Oh, cats. I have there's not a whole lot to talk about this morning other than what's in my cup. I have my chai, but I've exhausted my supply of, I have more. But I've switched over to Cinnabon creamer now in my chai. So I'm going to be doing that. I thought about calling our friend from down south. I don't know if I'm going to do that this morning or not yet. I didn't warn him. Usually I tell him, hey, I might call you tomorrow. But I didn't say anything to him. So we'll see how this goes. I have in my backup cup here, I still have my wonderfully delicious homemade sweet tea with peaches in it. That's just good stuff. It almost makes me not want to go out to eat anymore because I can't find any place that has that good of tea. That's for me, the meal's all about what kind of beverage I have. And typically, if they don't have tea, I usually don't even shop there. There's places that, and they get this, I guess now they're, there's this brisk sweet tea, the brisk tea that's out there that comes in a machine that they buy. It comes just, it's a soda fountain style. You can just, it's not good. It's not brewed. It's not home brewed. It's not fresh brewed. It's not brewed at all. It's just a chemical with flavoring. And it's, I don't like it too well. It's kind of a, how you say it's just not good. So I have it's first of all it's too sweet in a sense, but it's also too I rarely say that, but you can tell there's some it's like high fructose corn syrup or something. I don't know what it is. It's just got some kind of different flavor. It's not really, and the flavoring itself is kind of not really like tea. It's just something else. There you go. Well, that's the show, folks. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll move on to some other things. I'm going to talk about the polls a little bit. Yesterday, I talked about the subject. I think my Monday show is going to be more of a subject show, unless something crazy happens over the weekend, or if I just change my mind. You never know. With this show, you never know. I try to come up with these themes for different days. And I just ramble. So, in case you haven't noticed, if this is your first time listening to the show, you're probably wondering, what in the world is this show about? I wonder the same thing every day. When I push the record button, when I start the show, what's this show going to be about? I don't see where this goes. Because there is no real agenda. Sometimes I jot a few things down, but sometimes I don't even get there. And I'll go off on some tangent and then go down a rabbit hole and then there's a bunny trail and I'll find a rabbit and then there's a swirling toilet and I just you never know what's going to find. It's going to go crazy. So anyway, Today I want to talk about the polls. Yesterday I talked about liberty versus collectivism and you know, whether the two can meet. And my definitive answer is no. There's two opposing ideologies. Now, we have some things that we can agree on. There's things that we want to see. But the way we get there is two different avenues. And I blame the Republican Party for not in educating people. And, of course, that's also to do with the school system. Now, Florida has made some attempts to put some things in the school curriculum that it supposedly will help them understand the Constitution and understand some things. But they really need, and we used to have this kind of thing in school. I went through, we had stuff, we talked for a whole semester on constitutional foundational stuff, principles. And is that unusual for, I know it wasn't back then. You don't get that anymore in school. They might talk about the Constitution for a week, maybe, or a day. I can't believe that the kids I'm seeing come out of school nowadays have any understanding whatsoever of individual liberty. And the whole thing has been twisted on its head, and it's made out to be this Constitution that it's a socialist collectivist mentality. This idea that big government is good. I don't know. So we have all this stuff going on. Now, at the same time, we have, I'm not going to go back down that rabbit hole. If you want to watch that show, you can just tune into that show from yesterday. That's probably the best way to do that. You know, that's how that works. Best way to do it is just tune in from yesterday. Rather than have me talk to you about today, about what happened yesterday. That's probably silly. Today I want to talk about the polls. What's going on with the polls, and of course the only poll that really matters is election day polls now, or, you know, election season polls as it's being done now. We have before us, we have a conundrum here. And I think that the Kamala campaign, you know, they do this every time, right about this, right around the end of September. I've noticed, and I've done this, folks, I've been around for 60 years. I've seen, I was trying to count the other day. Have I seen 7 presidents in my lifetime? At least. Let's see. When I was born, Kennedy was president. I saw Lyndon B. Johnson. Of course, after he was assassinated, there was Lyndon B. Johnson. And then Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George Bush the first, Clinton, George Bush the second, Obama, Trump, Joe Biden. I've seen 11 presidents in my lifetime, most of whom I remember. I would say all of them I remember to some degree, even Kennedy. I just remember the watching on television the day he was shot, the news that night. Most people don't believe me when I tell them that, but when I describe the scene, my mom was freaked out when I told her. I described the television that we watched it on. In the house, in the room that we were in. She freaked out a little bit. So, we 11 presidents. And what I've seen throughout the years, and I've always kind of had a little keen eye towards politics, I guess, to some degree. And always, at the end of September, the polls tighten up. one candidate, usually the favorite of the media, the favorite of the pollers, the pollsters, will be just ahead of, just enough to keep the donations coming in. They're, so they're monitoring donations. They're, it's all about raising funds, raising money. And not only is it, you know, because there's a lot of marketing firms involved, there's a lot of, the whole machine behind the whole thing is all about getting the news out, getting the people's, you know, ramping people up, getting the message out there, marketing, packaging, everything that they do. It's all part of this whole scheme. And what motivates the people to do these things and to raise money and to do all this stuff and to continue to get, you know, with all the polls is all the payback, all that money that's flushing around out there. If you knew, if, like, let's say you donate $100 to your favorite campaign, you know, for your favorite candidate. If you knew how much of that $100 actually gets out there to booster the campaign, you'd probably vomit in your mouth a little bit. Because this is, it is mostly about running the machine. The campaign itself, the campaign funding, is all a part of the, that's where they make a lot of their money. This is where a lot of the money comes from. And yes, they, oh, well, they can't touch their campaign fund. They can't use their campaign funds for personal use. Do I need to show you the books and how they finagle this stuff around? You know, how many cousins and brothers and sisters and cousins and aunts and uncles they have that, that this money is funneled off to for their little part of the organization. And that money all comes back eventually to the pockets of the person running the campaign. This is the way almost, especially the, within the Democrats, Republicans do it too, but the Democrats definitely, they just, this is, they've got it down to, there's just a science. This is the way they do it. And they take campaign rules and laws. They stretch everything to the max. If there's a gray area, they're walking all over that. And once in a while, they get caught and they pay a fine, $200 or whatever. It's interesting how, well, you know, like AOC, for instance, AOC, when she first got into, this organization that is behind AOC, they were running auditions for candidates. And they had several of these, and the squad basically is made up of these people, but they were running these auditions, and of course, AOC showed up for this audition, and she came in. She was a bartender. This organization was going to run candidates, and they're behind her. So they're the machine behind AOC. Well, when she first got into office, she realized, you know, living in D.C. is really expensive. I can't afford this. She was actually complaining. She was saying that there needs to be some kind of subsidy for the representatives to live because it's just too expensive to live there in D.C. I think AOC now is worth over $1 million. Her net worth is worth over $1 million now. Let's see if we can find it here. We might be able to actually find something. Let's see what we can find here. AOC net worth. I was thinking it was like $1.7 million. Her net worth is now. How does that happen? You know, if she's complaining, oh, 20, I was way off. Oh my goodness. This is claiming that this is AOC's assets total no more than $60,000, documents show. There's this claim that she has a net worth of $29 million. And this other one that says that she's only worth $60,000. That's impossible. Both of these are lying, probably lying. It's probably, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle of this whole thing. This is, now, the way they count their money, is AOC worth $29 million or broke? U.S. representatives' portfolio revealed. Recent weeks have brought much debate about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's net worth, with posts claiming that she accumulated more than $29 million since becoming an elected U.S. Congresswoman in 2019. The mentioned posts usually cite CAKnowledge.com as a source of information. On March 23rd, the site released a report claiming that her net worth exceeds $29 million. However, since then, the claims have been debunked or false, most notably by Reuters fact-checked article. Well, of course, Reuters. According to her latest financial disclosure in 2021, this is where things get really stupid. According to her latest financial disclosure in 2021, AOC holds between $3,003 and $45,000. That's a huge disparity there, folks. $42,000 difference. What's the percentage spread on that from $3,000 to $45,000? They can't even narrow it down to that point, including a 401k pension plan that includes a 401k pension plan. 4 years, I guarantee you, this is ridiculous, and owes around $15,000 in student debt. By the way, she drives a Tesla. Further examination of her assets reveals that she holds between $1,001 and $15,000 in checking account, around $1,001 and $15,000 in a brokerage account, and that she invested up to $15,000 in her 401k pension plan. This one, she has a six-figure income. There's something very, very wrong with these numbers. Now, what gets me about this? She's either outspending, just spending money, just frivolously. My understanding is she's married. I'm not sure what that's all about, but I don't know what he makes. He's probably just living off her. I don't know of anything about. I haven't heard anything about him actually working anywhere. Maybe he's her campaign director or something. Let's look at average salary. U.S. congressman. Let's just look at this and see what it is here. Salaries of members of U.S. Congress. Salaries of members of U.S. Congress. Okay, let's look at this here. If they started in 2024, $174,000 a year. That's what they make. $174,000 a year. Now, they have, what's this other, in 2023, dollars a year prior to next increase. Okay. For some reason, there's $199,000 there for 2009, 2020, $237,000, blah, 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 in 2023 dollars when, I see. It said they're adjusting for inflation. The vice president makes $284,000 a year. Senators and House representative makes $174,000 a year. The president pro tem of the Senate is 193. So that, in other words, Chuck Schumer right now would be that the majority leader. Minority leaders in the Senate, 193-4. Majority leader and minority leader in the House of Representatives, $193,000. That would be Nancy Pelosi's former salary. Speaker of the House of Representatives, she would be the 223-5 is what she would have been making, quarter million a year. And yet she's worth over $100 million. And this is where things get really sticky. These people are professionals. One of the things that they do in this audition is they find out whether or not these people are, if they are solvent in terms of what's your tax situation like? I've seen people running for office in local districts. There was a guy here in the South Bend area who was running for office. He was on a Republican ticket. And he had this back tax thing. It was $80,000+, and it was discovered by the media. And they started, he owes back taxes. Oh, look, he has. Well, look, folks, I have had back taxes owed, and it's back when they literally came in and just estimated my tax owed amount. I probably owed about $4,000 or $5,000. It's out of a total of $40,000 that I had already paid. I owed probably $4,000 to $8,000, somewhere in that range, depending on how you look at the withholdings and everything else that was going on with that whole thing. I had a business at the time. This was back in the 90s. They came in and just estimated it based on my greatest year and decided that, and they just kept telling me I was still doing business even after I'd closed the business down for years afterwards. And my estimated tax owed plus penalties and interest was $140,000, $138,000, something odd change. There was no way. I looked at that and I was like, how am I supposed to pay that? It was more than the house. We bought our house for less than that. That was hanging over my head for years. We finally settled. After going through they came in and destroyed my business. The IRS agent showed up at my house. I invited him in and was talking to him, saying, yeah, I've got some payments coming in. I've got a couple customers that are coming in that, you know, I have some accounts receivables. They should be paying me. Accidentally told him the name of the people who owe me money, the businesses. He sent direct bills to those people to rather than pay me, they were supposed to pay the IRS. Now, you know what that does to you? If you have a high overhead business, let's say it cost me 90% of what I charged that customer was my out-of-pocket expenses to keep the business running. You know, I had equipment to pay for, I had people to pay, I had all this stuff going on, I had, you know, a lot of overhead, leases to pay, all kinds of things to pay, and just direct expenses, operating expenses. And I probably made 15 to 20% out of that, what I charged them. And then the IRS wants them to send all that money. Let's say it was $1,000. So instead of me making $200 and being able to pay off my $800 of expenses to keep the business going, they took it all. Now I have no operating expenses. How much longer do you think my business is going to keep going? If you think for a moment that the IRS or the government itself is small business friendly, you are shooting yourself in the foot, because they are not. They are not your friend. They want you to go out and work, to take the risk and make the investment. Labor from sun up to sundown, and then some. Work 7 days a week trying to make a business work, and then they want to come in and take your, you've increased, so no, we need to take some of that. By the way, you didn't keep very good records of all your stuff that you're supposed to keep records for us, because you know you work for us. You work. Their mentality is we work for them. And if you heard my show yesterday about collectivism, that is the basis by which almost all taxes are based on, is this whole collectivist mentality. The founders would be storming the Capitol, in my opinion. But we sit here and think that we have to keep doing this. Why all of a sudden are both candidates saying no taxes on tips? Well, how are we gonna survive without taxation? See, income tax is one of the most heinous taxes, immoral taxes. Between income tax and property tax, those two things are, in my opinion, the most egregious, heinous, immoral things that the government does to us. You want to charge me a sales tax? I don't have to buy it. Or I can work. They want you to charge, if I barter, if I trade two pigs for 100 gallons of gas, they want me to mark that down as income. Well, where's the income from? The pigs, were the pigs income? Does the other person have to? Well, the value that you exchanged that, you have to charge sales tax for that. No, we're just trading. This is bartering. This is trading. Well, you have to pay tax on that because now you've got the 100 gallons of gas. Well, but I gave him pigs. Do I get to take a loss on the pigs? Well, no, because they hate bartering. They hate trading because they can't do anything about it. They can't control it. If I trade my pig, I don't have pigs, by the way. But if I did, if I could trade one pig, let's say I had three pigs, and I traded one of my pigs for enough food to keep my other male and female pig alive for 2 years. And those pigs had a little family. And they had, say they had 5 or 6, 10 more pigs, whatever it is. And he just happened to have enough food to keep those pigs alive for 2 years, because I traded that one pig off for enough food for 2 years. Well, now my other pigs, now I have, 10 pigs. I can trade two more of those pigs out or maybe five pigs, four pigs, whatever, for more food for the pigs. And I eat one. I'll make some bacon. Making bacon. This is how you grow. This is how you grow your wealth. Government wants to come in and say, well, you've got increase. Well, pigs increase. I didn't increase anything. They want to charge you income tax for all that. They want to charge you for whatever, for your labor, for all the stuff that's going on there. That's how ridiculous it gets. And then, of course, then they, if that's not, that doesn't work, they want to come in with the FDA and everything else. And, your pigs have to have this in your alley. And then there's all kinds of other regulatory agencies for, farming. Just all kinds of crazy crap. But all we're doing with money is we're exchanging. I've gone out and I've worked for something else that had nothing to do with your particular business. But now I'm going to take those credits, basically that cash. I'm going to take that cash and I'm going to pay you. I've already worked for somebody else doing something else, but then I'm going to exchange that for this, and I'm going to give you and somehow they think they can step in and take some of that. You've traded your labor, your time, your life, which shouldn't be able to be taxed at all, because they're taking away life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. They're taking away your life or taxing your life without due process. And due process is not legislation. So we're slaves. We're chattel. We're literally subjects of the state, and I just think it's immoral. On its core principle, is it's immoral.
Well, you have to pay tax. Tax and taxes. You got to pay taxes. You have to pay the taxes. Can't get away with that. Tax and taxes.
Yeah. What kind of taxes? Income tax? Property tax? Is all tax, just any tax that the government comes up with, or we're supposed to just, it's just taxes. They came up with a new tax today. What they want to do now is tax your wealth every year. If you're worth $100,000, they want to tax you for that. Well, we're going to charge you, but only be for people who make over $400,000 a year or whatever, which does never happens that way. They've always introduced every tax that way. It's only going to be a tenth of 1%. This is the federal income tax was initially, I think it was a tenth of 1% or something. It was like a penny. Or it was less than a penny. Half a penny or a quarter of a penny or whatever it was. Fourth of a penny. And it was only for people who were, landowners or whatever it was. It initially started that way. And it was only going to be for a short period of time. How'd that work out for us? Because you see, once that camel gets its nose under the tent, it just goes around. It doesn't know any better. It just walks right on in. It thinks it's only as big as its nose. And it just keeps pushing its way in. Next thing you know, it's tearing down the tent. For those of you who haven't had a camel, you won't understand that. But I haven't had a camel, but I still understand it because I've seen it. So, onward and upward. Let's go back to the polls thing. That's what this show is supposed to be about. Yeah, here we are. So the polls, they tighten up. You got all these people around, you know, the real money is made in the campaigns, in the PAC groups, and all that's where all the money is slushing around. Those are the power centers of the government. And this money slushes around, and then they have, you know, all these bureaucrats, the non-elected people behind the scenes, which would be otherwise be known as the, I would call it the shallow state, and then there's the deep state, but there's the shallow state is the people who are around who are just, they're just the flying monkeys, the people who are around all the time who are just like the access to access and the ability to be on the inside, the in crowd, where the money is sloshing around and they can get, you know, they can occasionally get a little wave of money flowing their way. And they, you know, depending on who's in, who, what party's in power, that's there, it depends on how big they are with their particular sphere of influence. So they have all this stuff going on. And in the meantime, you have influencers who are out there who can, you know, the media, all these other people who are out there, they're doing their thing because it all revolves around money. Folks, man's basic problem is selfishness. That is the whole, at the core of our nature, what makes us makes us prone to sinning is selfishness. I have mentioned this in various different kinds of groupings and crowds, and not crowds necessarily, but in different groups of people. And it's interesting the ones who step up and say, "Oh, but you know, it's that kind of selfishness that keeps us alive, because otherwise we wouldn't survive because we have this innate nature of survival." That, yeah, in a worldly sense, that is the way it works. Yes. That is not the way it works in the kingdom of God. That is not God's economy. And I think that's what we step out in faith sometimes in those places of saying, this makes no sense, but this is what I'm going to do. Because there's an eternal mindset, not a living for the here and the now mindset. Now we have to be, there's all kinds of different perspectives. And it's kind of a mystery. It's a struggle of, you know, all the things that we do. Do we, you know, we plan for, you know, for the rapture happening today. And yet we live like the rapture could happen today. We plan for, you know, the rapture not happening for another 50 years or 100 years. So it's one of those things where we have to have a good sense of balance in our mentality here. But the campaign trail and the campaign funding that happens out there, this is why a lot of them will suspend their campaign instead of just dropping out. They don't really drop out. They just suspend their campaign. Or they'll retire. What they'll do is, like this happens to a lot of, this happened in 2016, this or 2017 actually is when it happened, but this happened a lot, actually the year of 2018, before the 2018 election, the midterms in 2018. A lot of Republicans who thought that they were going to get their clock cleaned because Trump was so unpopular. Well, it was unpopular because you guys pushed back on all of his legislation. You guys had this weird mentality of listening to the news media and being bamboozled. Well, they were all establishment people, so they decided they were going to they were campaigning from 2016 all the way through 2018. They campaigned, and then they announced they're retiring. All that time they're asking for people to donate funds. My local representative, who I had a lot of respect for. But she was just as much of a politician as anybody else. Right after she won the election, she was in state government first. And she ran for U.S. Congress in our district. As soon as she won, the first thing I got was an email. Actually, it was a thing in the mail, snail mail, asking for donations to continue the fight. The fight is just you voting the right way. That's what I've elected you for. I've elected you to vote for the right way, not to go out and start an advertising fund to do any kind of whatever you're doing. I don't know. What do you need my money for? I've just elected you. You were elected. I voted for you. What are you doing now? What am I giving my money to? So for 2 years she campaigned, or she was asking for donations. And she continued to win. Which is great. She did a good job in Congress, as far as I know. Everything I was following, she did a pretty good job. At the same time, it's like, what's with all the money thing? What's this money stuff about? You just vote. Vote the right way. That's what we're paying you for. That's why you make $174,000 a year to vote. Really difficult. Read stuff and vote. Read the bill before you vote on it.
Well, we have to pass the bill before we know what's in it.
Oh, that's great. What kind of mentality is that? Tells you everything you need to know about Nancy Pelosi.
Well, we have to pass the bill before we can find out what's in it.
Who wrote the bill? Let's get the person who wrote the bill up there and explain what's in it. If they lie to you, then put them in prison. See, a lot of times it's the lobbyists, it's the PAC groups and the lobbyists who are writing all these bills. It's like this 2025 agenda thing. Of course, they're trying to tag this onto Donald Trump. I don't know what it's all about. I can't find much in the 2025 thing that I would disagree with, but I haven't read that much about it. So I don't know. The only thing I've heard that the Democrats are terrified of in this 2025 agenda thing, I have not seen anything in there that is. Now, see, what happens is, so say this group comes out with this 2025 agenda. So what they do is they go around all the congressmen and they try to get them to sign on to this thing and say and agree with them on it. So, and when they do, they get donations. They raise money for them. They get this whole thing on board. It all has to do with campaign financing. Now, why am I saying all this stuff about campaign financing with regard to the polls? They play the polls to increase or decrease funding to their favor. What they will do, they always keep themselves a little bit ahead in the polls, so that they can look like it's worth donating funds. Oh, we're neck and neck, but we're still ahead. We're doing really well. It's worth putting your money. We just need your donation of $25 to keep this campaign going. And can I just ask for your funds today? Because we got to press ahead in our campaign. Our opponent now has out. You know, they got all this money out there. These big donors have come in and given them money. Some big donor gave them $2 million, and we got to come in. We got to combat that with the little guy, and we're fighting for the little guy. Which is, whatever it is they say, they go on and on about this whole. It's all about raising the funds. So that's what they do. They go in, they get these funds raised. Then what happens is usually in October that the polls start to tighten. Well, actually, end of September, which is right about now, the polls tighten up. The problem right now is, now this time in 2020, in September of 2020, Joe Biden was being shown to be like 4 to 6% ahead in most polls, in the national poll, popular vote. That tightened up near the end of October. But what ended up happening, well, and here's where we are right now. Right now, Donald Trump is now pushing ahead in national polls. Now, like I've always said, the polls tend to lag behind stuff that's going on. When I saw Donald Trump out there doing all these podcasts, he'll talk to anybody. Lex Fridman, who's not a right-wing guy at all. I think he was on Tim Pool, actually. He was on Gutfeld. He goes on all over the place. This is humanizing him. This is, people are just getting to know him for who he is. Then they'll talk about how he'll say something in a campaign rally. You have to realize he goes out there and talks for like an hour and a half to 2 hours in these rallies. He's not just talking policy the whole time. He's talking stories. He's talking about just family stuff and just regular down homes. You go out and talk for 2 hours and see if you don't say something that the media can use to twist against you. Because they can twist out of anything. Because they will, and they you're going to end up saying something that sounds a little hokey. If you're just sharing from your heart, because other people don't necessarily always agree with each other, and they're going to say, oh, you said something about whatever. By the way, this whole thing about dog meat, Barack Obama admitted when he was 7 years old, well, his parents fed him dog meat when he was 7 years old. Because it was a thing, but that it happened back in Indonesia, where he was from. Kenya. Where was he? Not Kenya. Where was it he came from? I don't know where. But apparently, maybe he'd lived in Indonesia for a while, I think. I don't know. He was like 7 years old, and his parents fed him dog meat. Of course, the thing that made it really kind of sad was that he made a joke about it at one of these comedian things. He talked about, what's the difference between a soccer mom and a pit bull? A pit bull is delicious. That's what he said. And of course, it didn't go over well. It was one of those things where, yeah, it was kind of funny, but it was kind of dark, and it was kind of, yeah, probably inappropriate. And I don't have a problem with that stuff. It's humor. I have no problem with it. It's one of those things where, okay, so he said it. Okay, so yeah, whatever. And yeah, maybe he was a kid, didn't even know he was eating dog meat at the time. I don't know. And maybe it's just not in their culture. It's just the way it is. I mean, there are some Asian cultures that are just, that's what they do. You have to eat the dog because that's what they, you know. Now, we in our culture consider dogs as our companions. There are some people that, in some cultures, that chickens are their companions. They have pet chickens, pet rooster, whatever it is. They wouldn't think of eating it. Maybe they would think of eating it if they get hungry enough. In our culture, typically, the European culture, we would not, I wouldn't care how hungry I was. I would probably starve to feed my dog, probably the way, just knowing me, I don't know. I don't know how I would act in that situation, but I probably would. Actually, I had a dog, and I wasn't eating very well, and I was actually feeding the dog better than I was eating myself. So there you go. So. I don't know. We have, so the polls right now, what I'm seeing right now is the Democrats are terrified. All the groundwork that Donald Trump has done and the campaign has done and everything that's happening, they're finally starting, people are starting to wake up to the fact that this is the dream team, folks. This is a coalition government that he has established now. Now, RFK Jr. Hopefully is kept in check with some of his other ideas. He's a very open guy. Now, he shares things about conversations that he has with Donald Trump. And I don't think that Donald necessarily expects him to say all these things in public, but he's saying them. But I don't think Donald Trump cares because it's the conversation. He's not lying. And I think that's what's important here is that RFK Jr. I think is an incredible asset to this, especially when it comes to food issues. It's right down his alley. And then you got J.D. Vance out there who's going on all these different shows and just tearing them up. He's not backing down on anything, and he's very articulate in the way he's explaining things. And then you've got, speaking of articulate, Vivek Ramaswamy is going out to college campuses and play. They are putting people in the places that they need to be and literally just blasting. And by the way, Vivek Ramaswamy is incredibly personable. He'll go to an event somewhere, and this is happening during his campaign, but I think, and it's still happening. He'll go someplace to an event somewhere to speak, and there's protesters out there. He'll invite the protesters in. He said, "Well, put down, you can't bring your signs, can't bring your protests, but just come on in. We want to talk to you. Instead of having this discourse out here, let's come inside and let's talk through the issues." He asks them what their name is. That's incredibly powerful, folks. It's incredibly powerful. I have tried to make, I am terrible with names. And the reason most people who say they're terrible with names, there's a reason for that. And I hate to say it, most of the time, not all the time, most of the time that people are bad with names is because they're self-centered. Because you don't care what their name is. Because you don't care about them. Now, I say that with, there are people who cannot process names very well. So there's a twofold thing here. There's in one case, someone introduces themselves, you might have 3,000 other things on your mind at the time they tell you your name, and you're just, okay, what was your name again? I can't. And it's one of those things where, now some people have different names that don't suit them, and I have a hard time remembering their names. Okay, what was that person's name? And I work with three different people in the day, and I'm like, what? Okay, is this Bob or was this Jim? I don't remember which one's which. Or I'll see them someplace else again, and I can't remember their name, even though I worked with them. It's one of those things where I've tried so hard now to make it a point to remember someone's name and call them by their name as often as I can. Because it is important. It's powerful, not on a manipulative sense in the word. It is powerful for them. I remember myself being in their position and having someone say my name several times. So in other words, I'd be in the middle of working and they'd say, "Hey, Kevin, can you do this? Or can you, they could have just said, "Can you do this? Can you do that? Can you get this done? Can you do this now?" But they'd say, "Kevin, can you get this done now?" Or they'd say, "If you could put all those up there, Kevin, that'd be great." There's something personably connected to that that empowers that individual. It validates them as a person. And it's not so much that I'm trying to get something out of them. I'm not trying to squeeze money more out of them by using, that's not it at all. But I want that person to know that what they're doing is important, that it has value, and that putting their name on that has a tendency to bring that value out. They realize that what they're doing is important, and they have some kind of, it validates who they are and what they're doing, which is important for them. It's important for for everybody, but it's important for them. It gives them a sense of responsibility. It does so many things. It stamps this responsibility on their head that elevates them. So I don't know. It's an interesting concept. It's an interesting thing. And I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not a geopolitical expert. I'm not a financial counselor or can't even spell the word dollar. I'm officially out of chai. But I have a lot of opinions. So I all I have left is my glorious sweet peach tea. So just understand that the polls are fake, basically is what I'm trying to say. Polling is very, you'll hear them talk once in a while about these inside polls they take. This election is going to come down to motivation of the voter. Voter motivation, I call it. because I don't think there are a lot. By the way, the trends in all minorities are turning towards Trump. He is increasing on every level. And I believe that a lot of the groundwork that has been done with all of these podcasts and every place Trump is showing up and the things he's saying, I think is finally hitting home with the fact that he doesn't just give word salads. He doesn't just give the same answer every time he's asked a question. This crazy interview, if you want to call it that, this campaign event that Kamala did, she had a teleprompter there to answer Oprah's questions. So I was born a middle-class child, and just on and on and on about this stuff. It's always the same thing over and over. Okay, we know you're born a middle-class child. We know this. And all she'll say at the end is, so this is something we have to work out. What are you going to do to decrease inflation? Well, see, so I was born in a middle-class family, and blah, 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 blah. So this is something we have to deal with. Wait, what are you going to do? You're going to mow your lawn? How are you going to do this? We're supposed to go mow our lawns and be proud of our lawns? That's going to deal with inflation? What'd you just say? We're Americans, and we believe this about America and America's. What? We love our country. We love our country. No, you don't. You just disenfranchised half your own voter base. Because they don't love their country. This country's racist and bigoted and homophobic. They're all deplorables. People are finding out that there was a recent, I don't know who this guy is. I think he's actually a Democrat mayor or governor. Recently came out and made this statement about Donald Trump, and it is very damaging to the Democrat Party. And I don't know, I think that he may have just recently converted to being a Republican or leaving the Democrat Party. I don't know for sure. He came out and started telling all, and this is an African-American guy, he's a person of color. He came out and explained that under Obama, the numbers of, like, for unemployment and inflation and all the other things that were out there for the black community, as he referred to it, he referred to black inflation, black unemployment. He didn't say anything about black jobs. But, you know, if Donald Trump says black anything, then it's, oh, he's racist. This guy was saying, you know, black unemployment, black. All went, and even black wages, the wages for black individuals, wages went down, unemployment went up, inflation was worse, homeownership went down. All these things that happened under Obama's, I think, first 6 years in the office. And things didn't start turning around until the last 2 years. Now, everybody says, well, that's just because we set it all up that way and it started happening. Well, that's not what was going on with the white population, the European population in the country. The opposite was happening. So how is that? How did it take 6 years for that to start turning around? Then they claim that, well, you know, Donald Trump was just working off the momentum of, you know, of course, we turned it all around, and then he took credit for it. Barack Obama was still blaming George Bush at the end of his first term. He was 3.5 years in and was blaming on the campaign trail, and he was blaming George Bush for the economic situation. This guy made it very clear. He showed that. Well, you know, whatever Obama was doing is fine. You know, at least he was turning it around. But he said under President Bush, and he explained everything that happened under President Bush in 3 years. He said it was accelerated by the tone of 3 to 4 times what Obama was doing. So they had the lowest unemployment among the black population in over 50 years. just one thing after another. He just rattled off this whole list of things that were, how they were better off under Trump. And of course, then the pandemic hit and all this stuff was, you know, and all you have to do is look at this and realize that, and here's my concern about this whole election. I know I've got to kind of wrap things up here. My whole concern is that these people are still unhinged. They're still out there making these crazy, radical, fired up statements about how Donald Trump is a dictator and he's going to kill us all and he's going to destroy the country and he's going to get us into nuclear. This is not going to happen after. They're not just going to concede the election, folks. They never have. They still haven't. The first question I would ask Hillary Clinton if I sat down with on an interview with her, that she's never been asked by anybody, because she doesn't sit down with anybody that's any kind of adversarial interview. Do you believe that Donald Trump was duly elected in 2016? Do you believe that the election was tampered with? Do you believe that he was a legitimate president? Because she has said up until about 6 months ago, she was saying that he was an illegitimate president. Ask her those questions. Ask her the same questions you asked Donald Trump about the 2020 election. She has no proof. She has no evidence. There's actually been investigations, the Mueller investigation, all these investigations that have been done into the 2016 election about Russian tampering, Russia stuff. Nothing was found. All the Russians definitely tampered with our elections. If you call putting out some tweets and some memes interference, I would say shutting down the count, pushing observers out, putting pizza boxes up over the windows, all this crap that's going on after 3 o'clock in the morning, magically the count changes. I would say there's some other problems. I would say, you know, legislation that was passed by mandate and not by legislative process that was done illegally and actually deemed unconstitutional in most of the states that this stuff happened in, I would say that's more election, you know, interference than anything the Russians did with a mean tweet. And yet, they still think they're justified in saying that Donald Trump was a Russian asset. Russia. Because nobody asks Hillary Clinton those questions. And she's still out there acting like a pundit. She's getting paid by somebody. She wrote a book, so she's on a book tour again. But she's got this, you know, she probably did a $10 million book tour, book deal of some kind, and she's out there saying what she, and this is just another way to launder money as well, by the way. It's just writing books like that. They'll come up with a book for her and she'll read it. And then she'll say, yeah, okay, well, I'll approve that. I'll go on a tour. You give me $10 million. I'll do, you know, 20 appearances somewhere and make my political statements and talk about what's in the book. And then this is what Mike Pence did. Mike Pence, he's being interviewed all over the place. He's doing a book tour. Basically, his agents all set all this stuff up. You're going to make an appearance on Fox. You're going to make an appearance on, you know, Ingram and all these other places. And they're going to ask you all these questions, and you're going to just keep referring to the book. Well, in my book, I say this, and in my book, I say this. That way, you get your book out there, and you try to promote your book, and then we'll see what we can do, because he probably got fronted, you know, several million dollars for putting the book out there. Because you haven't heard much about, you know, from Mike Pence here recently, have you? Other than he just, you know, doesn't endorse Trump. You don't see him out there on the campaign trail. Thank goodness, because frankly, the guy is a big government. He's a big government establishment guy, and there are some establishment people out there that actually have acted fairly well, but they're still at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, they're just slowing down the progress of the progressives. They're not stopping the progress. Donald Trump, I think, is with this coalition he's put together. You've got Elon Musk out there, who's going to head up government waste. Oh my word. We're going to have a government probably about a fourth the size it is now. It is going to be gutted. You think that the guy from Argentina did a good job. This is going to be ridiculous. If he's given the reins to do what he needs to do, I guarantee you, Elon Musk took Twitter. I think what did they have? They had he decreased the size of the Twitter staff by about down to a third of what it was, and it's still more profitable today than it ever was. It's amazing what he. The way he can look at something and just go, maybe it's his team, maybe it's him. I don't know. I think he's probably got he just has the sense of being able to he's a visionary. He just sees stuff for what it is. And of course, he has a good team that can carry this stuff out. More than anything that Elon Musk is, I think more than being an innovator, I think he's a team builder. You can't do this stuff on your own. He's not out there, you know, drawing up the schematics for the rockets. He has teams of people doing this stuff. But it's the guy who's leading those teams, in my opinion, that's probably that's the biggest thing that's going on there. It's very, very important to realize that stuff, in my opinion. So, in the meantime, folks, it has been an hour, believe it or not. And for me, this has flown by. Hopefully, it has flown by for you as well. Going into tomorrow, we will have a show tomorrow. It's not going to be live. However, tomorrow, if it is done from the worldwide headquarters, I'm equipped there to be able to do a video. And if nothing else, I'll probably be posting a video. It takes me about another 20 minutes to get things set up for video on Rumble. So I'm going to try to do that. And it takes a little while to process it as well. And of course, you have to upload it. So all those things realistically, it takes an extra hour, let alone doing the show. So I might cut the show down to a little bit less time, be able to get everything done. But in the meantime, God bless. Pray for our nation. Pray for our leaders. Pray for everybody involved, for safety, especially for everybody involved. Take care. Have a good night.